This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Episode of the Pedestrian Podcast at number 100 episode is looming large. This week, the Pedestrian Podcast, myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir? I'm all right. I'm all right. The view never changes. Something I say often to different people, different strokes and all that. I'm not too bad. You've been going to, before we get into all the Seahawks stuff happening last week, well, obviously this week is NFL in London week. What, if anyone who hasn't been to that stadium you call home, what should people expect when they walk in through the turnstiles of Sunday?
I would imagine it's going to make the NFL think, what the hell are we ever doing going to Wembley? Because it's chalk and cheese in terms of quality of stadium. It's a sporting venue, which Wembley just isn't. Wembley is like a, I don't know, Wembley's like a showpiece venue, if that, but it's just a shit place to watch sport. Whereas the new Tottenham Stadium is just a brilliant place to watch sport, as I think everyone will realise on Sunday. And I should be there watching, I think, I know it's not necessarily... I don't know who I'm going to cheers for. I've seen the Raiders play like four times now for some reason in various kind of spots around the world. But I don't know. I'm quite looking forward to watching the Bears defense get at it on Sunday. Yeah. Should be good fun.
Yeah, Khalil Mack again going against his old team should be should be fun.
Didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Obviously, this is a Seahawks podcast, allegedly. So we will talk some Seahawks. They made the trip that often... precarious trip down the West Coast to the desert and Glendale, Arizona, to face Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. And they came out, Adam, firstly, unscathed in comparative to recent history and visits to the Dome in Glendale, but also a quite comfortable evening's work, wasn't it?
Well, the stadium for us that... Yeah, a little bit terrifying, but they came through, and that's really, really good to know.
Yeah, I mean, it was 27-10, the final result. The Seahawks now 3-1, level with this week's opponents, but we'll get into a bit more on that later. But also, the biggest thing and the thing which kind of made it such a comfortable evening was they came out throwing the ball. It's on the early downs, and also after what, 20 minutes of gameplay, they were 17-3 up, and really, even though there's a couple of precarious drives where you kind of thought, what are they doing? But really, 17-3, 10 minutes left of the second quarter, and against a team which were pretty hapless for the most part, it kind of felt game over even at that early stage, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we have kind of bemoaned them for not really getting after... getting out ahead of a game. So to see them do it like that was really good to see. They did kind of do it a little bit in reverse where, you know, everyone was freaking out at 20-10 up because Kyler Murray just running a touchdown. But ultimately, there was a lot of complaining going on Sunday. And I just think, you know, a 14-point road win in division is just not to be sniffed at whenever you do it and wherever you do it.
No.
So as much as people were, you know, loving the moan, because, you know, one must moan at all times. You know,
yeah.
I don't know there's an awful lot more you can ask of what they saw on Sunday without, you know, certainly not on a general scheme. Obviously, there's some schematic things that people may want to point the finger at, but, you know, ultimately, if that's what you offered us, you'd have to take it.
Do you think that griping kind of comes from what we saw 7 days earlier and how it was just completely... rudderless at times, apart from Russell Wilson. Do you think that that kind of was like a recency bias been making people a bit panicky for those couple of drives where they went three and out? I mean, they just refused to throw for a couple of drives at the start of the third, well, for most of the third quarter. Do you think what happened, or what happened really through to the first 3 weeks, kind of played into that? As you say, it ended up pretty comfortable. It was pretty comfortable in the larger context of the game, but after what happened against the Saints, it probably made people a bit more jumpy, didn't it?
Probably, but I think in general people just like slagging off like the team. And you know, we are by no means guilt-free when it comes to that. No. We give them their fair amount. But I think like the Schottenheimer thing and the Pete Carroll being old and it being a defunct thing, like it's becoming almost like a bit now across the fan base. And like, you know what the team's going to do before the game starts. You may not like it, which is well within your right, but ultimately, at 20-3 up on the road, you know what Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer are going to do. They're going to basically try and end the game as quickly as possible. So to act like hugely surprised and to moan about it, it's kind of, you know, listen to the podcast more, because we could tell you that's what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, it almost seems folly to be annoyed about something that you know is going to happen. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. But also, it seems, I do think if they'd have...
I'm not condoning it, by the way. Like, I'm not saying that's the right way to do things, but like, you know, how many times can you flog this horse?
But obviously, individually, on the offensive side, it was pretty impressive and pretty academic, really. Russell Wilson, again, was sharp as he continued to start the 2019 season in pretty sharp fashion, going 22 for 28, 240 yards, one touchdown, but sacked four times. Adam, if what quarterbacks in the NFL through 4 weeks of the 2019 season have 10 or more total touchdowns and zero interceptions, how long do you think that list is?
It's definitely not more than three, and it might be two.
Yeah, it is Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson. I mean, it's getting to the stage of wider NFL where, if it's you and Jerry Rice, you're in good state. But if it's you and Patrick Mahomes, you're in good state, aren't you?
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes, I would say, is the undeniable MVP through four games so far.
Yeah.
So, as you say, if you can be in the same category as him for anything along those lines, even if it's because you're the only other quarterback with the initials PM, like, you would take that as something that's a good thing, just to be in the same category as Patrick Mahomes. It's kind of... Just see that as like the benchmark. Be in the same category of anything for him. Apart from vocal tone or something.
Yeah, and as you say, if you want to know about Patrick Mahomes, listen to the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
On that boat, on that wagon from the start. Russell Wilson, though, as Jake Heaps of 710 ESPN points out, is playing some incredibly clinical football and playing like at a level he probably hasn't really over his early career. In 4 weeks, he ranks first in completion percentage, second in touchdown to interception ratio, second in passer rating, eighth in passing yards, and he's tied for eighth in passing touchdowns. I mean, he is on a different gear so far. And as we said last week in the podcast, and also I said to Nat Coons on TalkSport 2 of the weekend, the gap between him and the second best team on the offensive side of the ball is wide and getting wider, isn't it?
Lovely plug. Really enjoyed that.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and I think that's, you know, this team in the past has not had to live or die by their skills and, you know, its quarterback. There have been games where Wilson has been able to play poorly in the main and the team still win. I mean, NFC Championship game 2015 is one that rings a bell there, you know. But you can't imagine that something like that would ever be possible again. Like, the score is almost directly proportionate to how well Russell Wilson's playing at the moment, and I think that's pretty well reflected in the four scores we've had so far, really.
Yeah, I mean, we've already talked about how people react to certain parts and people saying that they haven't changed their ways at all on the offensive side, But his stats, I mean, he's getting the ball out, I think, over 55% of the time. It's getting out within under 3 seconds. I mean, they have sort of changed their way, haven't they? Or
yeah, I mean, it's recency bias to suggest otherwise. Like, remember that Dallas Cowboys game at home last year?
Yeah.
Which was week three. I think we were 2-2 last year, so you have to remind me who we played in week four last year. But
it's Arizona.
Was that was on the road as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When Thomas went off. I mean, you were at that game, and I'm pretty sure you were, like, booing, basically.
That was pretty close.
Yeah, you know, you were as close to it as possible. And
yeah.
If you remember, it was a last-second Janikowski field goal that took us from... We were losing to winning, or was it maybe a tie to winning?
I think it was 20-20. I think it was... Because Josh Rosen brought him back in the second half, throwing to Kirk and Fitzgerald, as always. But
I mean, yeah, those performances were a disgrace. And
it wasn't fun.
You would have to say that in almost all elements, this is better than it was last year. So, I mean, you know, we love to take the piss, but I think you have to suggest that there are improvements being made.
Yeah, most definitely. But also, I think like Pete Carroll said, I think he definitely said Monday, I think he said earlier tonight that they're not there yet at any aspect. Even talking about certain players, obviously talk about Ansah and RJ Collier and Clowney on the defensive side of the ball. But they weren't there yet. He was still saying that when they left London, which is, what, 3 weeks short of a year ago. So the fact that they're in the state they are, headed into what is effectively going to be a mini bye week after the game on Thursday night against the Rams, the fact that they could be in a pretty strong position in the NFC, in the NFC West, with all sorts in their favour, and Pete Carroll is still saying, yeah, they're not there yet, but he's also saying it earlier, is encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the team could play like this for the next 12 games and be within a really good shot of winning the division. You could not say that after 4 games last year.
No, it was... The machine that we faced this week was in a completely different stratosphere to what it was. Russell Wilson, though, through the one touchdown on Sunday to Will Disley. Will Disley becoming the first tight end in the NFL with 4 or more touchdowns in the first 4 weeks of the season since Rob Gronkowski did it in 2015. And also Disley scored his 6th career touchdown on that 9-yard pass from Wilson. It is the most touchdowns by an NFL tight end through just 8 career games since Pittsburgh Steeler Heath Miller scored 6 in his first 7 back in 2005. I mean, Disley, the comparisons to Jimmy Graham are boring and somewhat slanted from certain viewpoints, but he's becoming a legitimate weapon in this offense. But also a big thing we've talked about with Russell Wilson in the past, with minus Doug Baldwin in this offense, the trust is quite clearly there, isn't it?
Yeah, there's. I mean, the guy was playing defensive line in college 5 years ago. It's amazing. No,
not even that, like 4 years ago.
Was that when he made... When did he make the transition?
Was his second year, maybe even second year of the league. So, yeah. I think his last year at U Derby, he played tight end because he was like 95, I think his number was, as a tight end.
Ridiculous number. This is going to be a completely bizarre comparison, but, you know, it's boring to compare football players with football players, so let's try and mix it up a bit. But, you know, when Joe Root is batting at his... And, like, he just plays with such soft hands that the ball just, like, just it hits the bat, but it only kind of hits it, like, it kisses the bat. That's kind of how I feel watching him catch. Like, it's so clean, and his hands are so soft. It's like, it's just so comfortable when he's catching it. I don't know what it is. I know it's a completely stupid comparison to make, but he just catches it differently to a lot of other players. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, because like if there's the deep ball in this game to Tyler Lockett where I think Swearinger misjudges it and jumps under the ball and kind of Lockett kind of last second hauls it in. Then you compare him to the touchdown catch from Disley. Obviously, he's a lot more open than Lockett was. But yeah, there is. It's just the it's comfort.
The arms go out, the ball hits the hands, and that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
And there's no fuss.
Yeah, because like they throw, apart from Lockett, you throw to any other person in this offense at the minute, and it's a flip of the coin if he's going to catch it, apart from Disley, isn't it? I mean, yeah. DK Metcalf's not within everything, like one-on-one. David Moore, it kind of seems to be running one route at the minute, and then you've got Jaron Brown, who had finally appeared on the stat sheet on Sunday. But yeah, Disley, yeah, I guess it's a strange comparison to make, but it's got, for the first time since November 2016 against the Philadelphia Eagles, which is probably the start of all this injury nonsense, CJ Prosise. I mean, I think it's a 150-week gap between touchdowns, but he showed on Sunday, even just with that touchdown run, the reason that the team kept him around for so long, for all those annoying little niggles and question marks over his want to and everything else he was throwing at him, he kind of answered some of that with just that one touchdown run.
Yeah, it's a huge positive, and fair play to them for taking quite a lot of heat for keeping him around when the very easy thing to do would have been to cut him because of the injuries, and no one would have, very few people would have said they shouldn't have cut him if he'd gone. So, yeah, fair play to him for keeping around
On the defensive side of the ball, it's a 27-yard pick six. I think 27 is probably less than rewatched the clip back. Jadeveon Clowney arrived also for the 2019 Seahawks, and in that one play kind of made the price we paid for him worth it, didn't he?
Reminded me of the Bruce Irvin one against the Raiders that we saw a few years ago, where you just read it, kind of don't fumble it, but he batted it out to himself a little bit, and then just like, right, I'm bigger than you, I'm faster than you, I'm stronger than you, and I'm going to run this all the way back in, and it's going to be glorious. And it was so good.
It's so much fun to watch. He ran away. It was running away from jail so easy, so it wasn't the toughest test, but he was untouched after tipping a pass to himself. It's just yeah, it was just incredible. But we talked last week about how the team may be pushed out of their comfort zone on the defensive side, how a lot may be asked of secondary. They stayed in base with the nickel guy a hell of a lot more compared to what the teams against the Cardinals did in the first 3 weeks. But also, more importantly, with the arm that Kyler Murray has, there was nothing over the top of that safety duo, and they kind of come out of it with a lot more confidence in their abilities moving forward for this season than they probably went into the game on Sunday afternoon, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a good test to have in advance of what we're going to see on Thursday, which is not going to be easy at all. So it was nice to know that they could, you know, stick to their convictions and it would work. Whether or not it's going to work on Thursday is that's going to be obviously the big test. But it's amazing that like they are so against the modern convention of what everyone else is doing in the league, and it's working and they're winning. So it's going to be interesting to see how long that lasts. I mean, one of them may be in jail, which could be a slight issue at some point during the season. You know, it's never advised. That's one way to take him off the field, is by imprisoning the guy. Seems a little bit harsh, but you know. So we'll have to see how that pans out, and if that does happen, what they do, whether you see more BBK or Cody Barton or someone like that to fill in and stick with that base defense, or if they'll kind of go more nickel heavy. But we've got a couple of months to worry about that, I think. And with Thursday coming along, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with, you know, a receiver trio which is different class altogether to anything that they've seen thus far.
That's the Woods mentality. You know, we don't care about how many targets we've had throughout the course of the game or what the numbers are. We're savages. When it's our time to make plays, and when we're given the opportunity to make plays, we are going to make them. And we have shown that, you know, the Woots legacy and tradition has been since Sidney Rice was here. So, you know, it's not going to change.
So, yeah, Thursday Night Football, Adam, and the Neon Green are back. Action Green Gang is alive and well, Adam.
Well, that has immediately ruined the entire spectacle for me, because it is probably the worst kit in all of sport history, I might say.
So
that's a bit of a shame.
That Man City orange yellow thing is pretty bad.
Tequila Sunrise, baby. I'd much rather that than the neon nuclear vomit. I have to say. I really think it's awful. But, hey, some people like it, some people don't. They can be wrong. That's what it is.
Yeah, so the Seahawks are back on primetime, the first of five, as it currently stands, primetime games for the Seahawks, which is always fun, having a Friday morning 1 a.m. kickoff. But since Pete Carroll took over in 2010, the Seahawks are 26-5-1. Which is an NFL best 8-28 winning percentage in primetime games, outscoring opponents 834-465. They are 8-1 on Thursday Night Football and 17-2 at home in primetime games, dating back to the day Pete Carroll glided into town back in 2010. We'll get into the reasons, Adam, but I think we kind of spoke. There's a weird sense of confidence moving into this game.
In a sporting environment. And the last time I was optimistic was the Saints, and that went ever so well. So that's a slight concern. But I don't know, I feel like we could be well matched here. And I feel like the Rams are kind of, they're not creaking, but they feel on the way to a creak. For me, yeah. And I think the Todd Gurley situation is that cloud that's hanging over the whole franchise at the moment, and there's obviously so much that's being kept under wraps. It doesn't feel a million miles away from the situation, unfortunately, that we're going through at Spurs, where kind of everything is made out to be fine, and there's enough wins that you can just about think it's okay, but there might be kind of one mishap away from a serious problem, which I hope happens more for the Rams than it does for Spurs, because that would be...
Yeah, on that Todd Gurley thing, he's touched the ball almost 50 times less than he did back in 2017 and 33 times less than he did last year. His usage and his general outlook and happiness seems to be dwindling. But obviously, Sunday night for the Rams, I think we commented in our group chat, like, what on earth happened there, Adam?
Just bizarre. You couldn't really... No, just 55 points.
Against Jameis Winston, who 2 weeks ago was close to being benched. Before that Thursday night game in Carolina, he was on the precipice of being a complete bust for the Bucs. And now he puts 55 points on Aaron Donald and the Rams and Wade Phillips' defense. It's just utterly bizarre. And also, quite a fun thing coming out of that was the Dabikin Sioux went back to LA and scored more touchdowns than the Rams did in 60 minutes in the Super Bowl, Adam.
So he scored double the points that they did in the whole of the Super Bowl.
He did. Obviously, the main part outside of Gurley, another big thing for the Rams is Jared Goff. I think it's his 12th turnover through the 4 weeks of season. His four games since signing a massive $134 million LOL contract in the summer, he's 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and he's lost 4 fumbles. In 2018, he just had 12 interceptions. He was hit 9 times on Sunday, and of the 6 lowest graded offensive players on Pro Football Focus for the Rams, 5 of them are their offensive line. This that kind of all points back to that point you made, where there's a bit of creak going on in this team, but also at the same time, they're going to be somewhat displeased after what happened on Sunday, and we might face the brunt of that, Adam.
You might well do, and I guess the flip side is that they're saving Todd Gurley for December and January, when he kind of ran out of steam a bit last year, and so that now Sean McVay could easily turn around and say, well, you know, If he's going to have X number of snaps across the season, I'd much rather he have had them at a time when they really matter towards the end of the season. And they could argue that the offensive line has been banged up, but is going to get more experience as it goes on, so that would protect Jared Goff. But you'd have to say it feels like a good time to be playing them.
Yeah. I have no idea why I'm so confident about this this week. I don't like it, because it's the Rams, and it's going to be even uber more annoying than it would be otherwise. But you talked about the wide receiver options. Obviously, you got Higbee and Everett at tight end, but Kupp, Woods, and Cooks is as diverse as an attack as we're going to face this year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to score points.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep them to 13, 14 points. Like, you have to assume they're probably going to score 24, 25 points minimum.
Yeah.
So I guess my optimism is on the fact that Wilson is balling and he's going to have to keep doing that. Otherwise, we're going to have trouble. Like, I'm not expecting that this is going to be anything like a rout. I kind of feel that, you know, I'm just hoping that we are going to play well enough to be better than their good stuff, because they're going to do good things, and Cooper Kupp is going to get you at some point, and it, you know, it's likely that one of these play action passes is going to free Brandon Cooks up, you know, up against you know, two fairly mediocre safeties at times, especially if, you know, Tedrick Thompson's playing there or whatever. So they're going to do good stuff, but I guess the optimism is that I feel that we've got enough good stuff in our locker now to take away that. And also, the whole point of this team, as we said a few weeks ago, is that they kind of play down to their opposition in order to then play up to the opposition when it matters. And,
yeah,
and you'd hope on a Thursday night in front of a rabid fan base, liquored up for sure, that would hopefully be good and lead some positive results.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the box score for their game on Sunday against Buccaneers. They have 36 first downs on offense. How is that possible? 518 yards against the Buccaneers. They've only scored under 27 points once a season. That was when they beat the Browns in Cleveland in week three. Yeah, this offense is, yeah, they're going to put points up. They're going to do it in a whole fashion of ways. But I think the biggest thing that this team, the Seahawks, has going into this game is the fact that Clowney, as we said, we're talking about the Arizona game this past weekend, Clowney and Ansah, and Quinton Jefferson and Rasheem Green, their seasons are only ascending while they're kind of just going about their business. They seem to be getting a grasp of it. And this O-line is clearly somewhat more of an issue for the Rams than it has been under Sean McVay and in LA since they moved back out there. But the fact that those three people are ascending, and Jared Goff has an emerging habit of giving the ball up at the first sign of trouble, it just kind of seems like this is one of those games where the crowd noise and the defense and the defensive line kind of all comes together, and it's going to be a long night for a quarterback, which, despite what the success he's had, me and you don't really rate, do we? And I think he's going to add more weight to that fire, hopefully, than he will if the Seahawks flop at home again, Adam.
Yeah, I think also I want to believe this team is good, and you don't win or lose a season based on what you do in week five, but it just kind of feels like it's a massive, massive opportunity for a youngish team to if I've been listening to a bit of Seattle radio this week, and a lot of it is like, are they pretenders or are they contenders? Because they've only beaten teams that have now one cumulative win, because the Steelers played the Bengals. But the Steelers could have played anyone this week and lost. Then you would be facing, your three wins thus far would have been against teams with zero wins across the season. So to have an opportunity to have a struggling-ish good team come into your house and give you the chance to beat them, it just feels like a massive night for the mindset of the team, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But also, like, we dropped one against the Saints, and that kind of, a lot of people pointed to, if it comes to it, playoff tiebreakers and everything, but if they can get out of a win out of the Rams game at home, they sit two, they've won their first two games in division, but also it kind of cancels out. I mean, having the tiebreaker in the division is probably going to pay a lot more for their postseason aspirations than the wider NFC, because it seems that the NFC is at some point going to split into two, the haves and have-nots. But to win this and start the divisional run 2-0 and still having the other two teams to play at home in the division, it carries a lot of weight, and that's just despite it being at the start of October, Adam.
Well, like, we say all the time about how so much of this game is about the top 2 inches of your body and your brain, and you don't necessarily need to be good if you think you're good.
Yeah.
Like, if they win this game and they get through it and they're 4-1, like, the belief that that will give them will make up 5-6 points a game against any team they play. As long as they believe that they're good enough to mix it against this lot. And, you know, Pete Carroll is the king of making a team believe they're up to it. You know, we've said a couple times over the last few years that there's going to be a painful rebuild at some point. And it's not really showing, just because the belief that they instill in these players amongst the coaching staff, as much as you want to criticise, or we criticise what they do and some schematic stuff, like, they are very, very good managers and making them believe in what they can do.
Yeah.
And a win like this, would have an immeasurable effect on the players.
Yeah, and it also puts some scoreboard pressure on the 49ers, who come back off their bye week, an early bye week, and now have 12 straight games to play. One big thing, Aaron Donald, we talk about people arriving in 2019, he hasn't really been the impact he was, but when you do what he's done over the last couple of years, he's going to be an issue for a part of the offensive line. Me, probably more than you, have been a bit critical of through the first month of the season. Those three guys in the middle are going to have a big say on how this offense, what this offense can do on Thursday night, aren't they, with that number 99?
Yeah, very much so. I was interesting. I was listening to an interview with Walter Jones this afternoon, and he was saying that, I think Wilson said that of all the players he's played against, Donald is the only one who's got that closing speed to get after him. So, like, if Donald beats the offensive line, he will get to Wilson. He's too quick for Wilson to get away from, which is saying quite something given how elusive Wilson is. So it's going to be a huge onus, but you know, you have to chip and you have to double team. And the thing is, there isn't the wealth of talent outside of Donald that there has been in the previous few years when playing against them. That, you know, you can't necessarily direct more resources on Donald. I mean, there's Clay Matthews, of course, but you would like to think that you could stop Clay Matthews with a 1v1. You don't need to double team him as well. So I guess you'd hope that you can afford to double-team Donald and still have enough there protection-wise to get the job done on the rest.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Donald is going to have a big say. Corey Littleton's having a pretty good start to season. At linebacker, Dante Fowler's going to be probably...
I'm not sure he's healthy.
Who?
The linebacker.
Littleton.
I'm not sure. They've got big problems at linebacker.
Oh, okay. Behind then kind of seems to be... get at a ball. I mean, they've given up 240 yards to all four quarterbacks they've faced, more than 270 to three of the quarterbacks they've faced. This Rams team is an interesting read when you look at box scores and look at all the analytics and stats and everything. It just seems a perfect opportunity, a pretty good time for Seahawks to play these Rams before they come back around again at the back end of the season. The start of December is when we head down to the LA Coliseum. One to watch, or one you will be watching for on offensive side of the ball, Adam?
Who am I going to be watching? I think DK Metcalf needs to show that he can be a little bit more than just a left flank runner. They're obviously making it as easy for him as possible, but I think he's got 9 catches on 19 targets, which is not ideal, if we're being honest. Mm. But that's not to say that all the throws are going to be there. So it would be nice to see him have a big impact on the game. I'm not looking for 8 catches, but, you know, give me 3 catches for 78 yards.
Yeah, just move the chains a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think Metcalf's good one. I think I'm going to go with any one of those three guys in the middle. I think Fluker has to be better than last time he played at Centric Field. I think was pretty highly rated by PFF on Sunday, and obviously Justin Britt is going to have to... it's going to be interesting watching, because obviously last time they saw each other, they were squaring up to each other after the game down in LA, Adam. Anyway, Mr. Donald. But yeah, I think defensive side, one to watch.
Defensive side, well, I'm always going to watch Clowney because he's just the most fun player ever. Yeah. But I am going to be looking at Shaq Griffin to get his first pick of the season.
Yeah, he is playing at a pretty high level, but yeah, he's yet to have that INT. I think Kendricks and KJ are the guys I'll be focused on. I know it's more than one person again, but they're going to spread it out. But also, as we said, in comparison to Arizona spreading out, their talent level is a bit more. And obviously, all those quick slants, Cooper Kupp is just a ridiculously efficient game-breaking threat at wide receiver. So whoever gets the Kupp or Woods or the tight end for this Rams offense is going to be one to watch, and if he has a good game or doesn't have that to take away bad play that we'll talk about post game, then I think the Seahawks could be in, hopefully will be in, a good state of affairs coming out of the game. Adam, prediction?
24 Seattle.
I'm going to go 30-24, I think, to Seattle as well. I don't know why. I don't like how confident I am moving forward. But yeah, before we wrap up, good week, bad week, Adam. Anyone for either one?
It's a good week for it's a good week for a lot of people. One of them, like Bruce Arians, I mean, that is a... If he can turn around Jameis Winston, that might be one of the most significant moments of his, and illustrious, by the way, coaching career. I mean, he's done Big Ben, Carson Palmer, Andrew Luck, but you could argue that all of those, you know, have never been written off as players to the extent where Winston is like, you wouldn't even, you know, you would think certain cut, certainly not a fifth round option, not going to pay him. But if he can turn him around, that would be a remarkable
thing. Yeah, I think Carson Palmer is probably the next on the list above Winston, in, if that makes sense, like, or below Winston on rescue projects, because obviously he was coming off a pretty bad injury in Cincinnati, I think. And yeah, I mean, Carson Palmer went in the Ring of Honor at Arizona this past weekend, so that's, a lot of that was down to work Arians did. I did have a good week, but now I forgot. I think it's been a good week again, and it's going to be a good week for Daniel Jones. I think Dwayne Haskins throwing every interception every time he stepped back did help him. But I think I saw a tweet earlier today where Daniel Jones is now the favourite to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, when, what, a month ago he was a punchline, Adam. I think they have a real chance. And also Pat Shermer saying that Barkley could be back quicker and earlier than they expect him to be back in the next couple of weeks kind of suggests that they kind of see an opportunity for a little bit of a run at the Cowboys, who obviously dropped that one in New Orleans on Sunday night. So the New York Giants are going to be, and they're getting Golden Tate back this weekend. They could be an interesting team to watch until they probably fall flat on their face in the next couple of weeks. But this weekend, with Daniel Jones, Golden Tate, and the Cowboys just being half a game ahead of them, they are quite an interesting team. So I think it's been a good week for Daniel Jones, Adam.
It's been amazing. I mean, the funny thing is that, like, he's got the narrative, which is going really well for him. Because if you look at his pass map from Sunday, I believe he had more interceptions than completions when throwing further than 10 yards. Yeah. But obviously, because the whole kind of vibe around him is so positive, like, that stuff can be very easily missed out. But I mean, it's a great story. And for someone that was booed by Yankee fans in May or whatever, he's the kind of guy that you certainly root for and want to do well.
Bad week for Adam.
Bad week for, I've got a more general point to make, but not a great week for Cam Newton, is it?
No.
That's just one that's thrown to the top of my head, you know, with Kyle Allen doing so well. But it's not a great week for just a number of quarterbacks who are watching their backups come in and win games, like, well. I mean, someone like Gardner Minshew, I heard a good point on a podcast. Someone said that, you know, if he was a first-round pick that was coming in to the league and these were his first four games, people would be saying, yep, absolutely, he's going to make it, and he's what a great sign. He's the next big thing. But obviously, the draft stock of someone that when he's a sixth-round pick, there's always going to be a doubt of whether he can do it. But, you know, if he was drafted where Trubisky was drafted, for example, people would be so delighted with him, wouldn't they?
Yeah, the play maybe ran around in the pocket. It's, I think someone put on Twitter that that's not teachable. That's just natural, given talent, and the fact he floated one in the back end zone and they scored. And they won yet again on the road in a place which is infamously tough, especially in September. against Joe Flacco, who's apparently, according to some stat guys, he's having a pretty strong start despite the Broncos being completely winless. But yeah, I think all those backup quarterbacks, although there are some teams calling for their backup quarterback at the same point, it's not been a great week. And talking of backups being called for, it's not a good week for Andy Dalton. He looked completely and utterly washed against the Steelers. He had no answer. He looks to be the archetypal person who's been hit one too many times. The 8 sacks wouldn't mean one of my fantasy matchups, which was very appreciated. It was not an easy watch, not a fun watch, but also the frustration seemed to be coming in, and that offense could not do a thing against a defense which, despite all the investment on it, is not that highly thought of or touted. But yeah, they look like the 85 Bears against that offensive output on Monday night, Adam.
Yeah, it was all of the buzz that you could kind of forgive the Bengals fans for having after the narrow week one loss, where you looked at them and thought, hang on, there could be something here. That's probably already gone, isn't it? And you've got that meme of AJ Green on the side just watching another sack, just thinking, what the hell am I doing having my career tethered to this guy? Feel for him.
I don't see him being here next year. Also, two other things in the NFL. Adam, one of our favourite happenings happened twice within 3 hours of each other. There were two examples of scorigami on Sunday. The 40-25 Cleveland Brown win in Baltimore, which was incredibly impressive, was the 1,049th unique score in NFL history. And then that scoreline I mentioned earlier, 55-40 Tampa Bay winning in LA, was the 1,050th unique final score. I mean, that is just it's just fun to track. I mean, the Twitter account tracks every score in every game in the league all through Sunday nights, and it's quite cool that two happened on the same evening, Adam.
You love it. You got to love it. And yeah, that is a great account. It's well worth following, especially they give you the percentage of the most likely scorigami it's going to be. That's a really great thing.
And also one more thing, this game on Thursday night before the game, I think about half an hour before the game starts, the Seahawks are making former owner Paul Allen the 12th member to be inducted into the Seahawks Ring of Honor. His name will be going on the inside of the stadium next to the likes of, Cortez Kennedy's up there, Pete Goss is up there, also the luminaries of this franchise are up there, and Paul Allen, deservedly, Adam, is joining those ranks and almost quite fittingly becoming the 12th member of that exclusive club, Adam.
Absolutely. It's almost like it was planned that way for him to be the 12th guy on.
I think that's everything NFL related. Obviously,
I had a question for you, actually,
Stu. Okay, go on then.
I am looking at players like Josh Rosen and Dwayne Haskins, who have been drafted by and since moved to completely dysfunctional teams, and it's going to have an impact on their career. And you're seeing a league now which has a lot of pretty decent and well-run organizations, and some that are just obviously largely through ownership or general manager, like just piss poor in the way they're run. And I just wonder if in the new CBA coming around, is there going to be anything where a lot of these younger players are going to try and protect themselves by, maybe being able to resist where they're drafted? Because you look at someone like Haskins and Josh Rosen, who had the world at their feet when they came out of college, and I feel terrible for them, because Rosen especially is having his career ruined by appalling teams that he's had no say in that have picked him up.
Yeah, I think with Josh Rosen, it's seven different offensive coordinators. And obviously, three of those years he was with Jim Mora, and that was not fun. And Jim Mora, the first opportunity, just ran his name through the dirt because, well, when Jim Mora was asking for dirt bags when he's in Seattle, he didn't have to look very far. Josh Rosen is like you watch the Dolphins highlights, and they kind of, until the other team adjusts at halftime or three or four drives in. Like in baseball, they say it's the second time through a lineup, which is where the pitcher, starting pitch, is tested, and that's where he has to have his best stuff. The second time or third time around for Josh Rosen in this team, in this coaching staff, is not pretty. Dwayne Haskins was just I don't know what the hell happened there. Was it four interceptions he threw on Sunday? But I think with the player power, it's coming, it's happening. We've seen it a little bit in Seattle, not go completely the way of player power. But in the NBA, you saw Kawhi Leonard walk into Steve Ballmer's office and say, "I'll only sign if you get me this player to play with." And they went out and done it. Player power is massive in the NBA, and the NFL is definitely going that way. And the next natural step would suggest that is going to be a big deal and a big takeaway that NFLPA take away from whatever that next CBA looks like, I think. So, yeah, I think it is happening. But there's not a lot you can do about shoddy coaching staff. So, I mean, a surname goes a long way. I think the fact that, I mean, Dan Snyder's been a terrible owner. Bruce Allen, the fact he's still involved in the sport is just ridiculous. And Jay Gruden just does not look like... I think it is changing, but I think player power is just going to become a bigger, a more consistent storyline and thread for this league and for these players entering a league, when especially if the NCAA is completely handcuffed with how much money, and then they have to fork over to the players at that level, they're coming in with more opportunities at their feet. Literally as well. So yeah, I think it's going to swing back one way, the other way, and I don't think it's going to take quite a lot for it to swing back to where we were 2 or 3 years ago.
Nice. But have we got anything for the big?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
So Adam, you wanted it, so who have you got to put in the bin this week?
Oh, you've done me in. I'll give you someone who you may have put in the bin in the past, who can get out of the bin for some great banter. And you put this on our WhatsApp group, Rex Ryan. Baker Mayfield said that, with regards to Rex Ryan, that anyone not wearing orange and brown, their opinion basically doesn't matter when it comes to the Cleveland Browns. So he goes on TV on Sunday night after the Browns get their great win against Baltimore. Good week for Freddie Kitchens, by the way. And he's got his brown suit on, his orange bow tie on, and his absolutely dazzling set of Nashes. I didn't see actually what he said, but it was just a very, very funny little bit that he did. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, he mentioned that he was what the colour he was wearing. It was quite funny. He said, yeah, I am wearing this, whatever this colour, brown is, an orange tie, because, yeah, I do think this. But also, at the same point, I do enjoy him, and I kind of get, like, I think me and Akim tweeted on Sunday, if like, it doesn't mean a lot to some people, but bulletin board material clearly works for Baker Mayfield. But at the same time, he doesn't have to react to every negative comment. You can let some of it go. I mean, the context of what Rex Ryan said was pretty fair, because through 3 weeks, they were awful, really, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, the one week they exploded this week against Baltimore Ravens, their best offensive player, Odell Beckham, was it two catches for 17 yards or something? He had his lowest output in catches and yards in his NFL career. So, at the same time, you don't have to react to everything. I think, yeah, you might need to tone that, but I mean, you can take it on the board. I mean, I think I've mentioned before, you watch those old Real Rob reports with Bobby Wagner, and every time Mike Rob spoke to him, he would quote and recite the number pick, what round, and what players went before him. Richard Sherman does the same as well when he was drafted. So there's ways of using bulletin board material, but doesn't have to react the way he has over the last couple of weeks to absolutely everything. But yeah, that Rex Ryan thing was.
Do you think Baker does it because of, like, it's been such a desperate town for a hero in a football jersey? Obviously, LeBron James they've had, who's been amazing, but, like, it's a great way to curry favour with the fan base.
Yeah, probably. And I think Rex Ryan and, well, both him and Rob are pretty easy targets at the same time as well. Of all the talking heads you get on that, on ESPN and NFL Network, of all the people they employ, I think he is probably high up the list of easy sitting ducks, as it were, for targets. Get in the bin this week, I'm going to go with Mike Leach. The Cougars lost again in Utah. They've lost two consecutive games after giving up a 35-point lead. And then he, when I read it, I thought he was reciting what would be my dating profile. Was it fat, lazy, and entitled? That's how he described his players after their output and loss against a pretty good Utah team. It's just the reason, like, he's their coach. He's the highest paid, is it state employee in the state of Washington? He's like, I know he's not going to, but he's like, it all starts with him, surely. And I think the way he just completely threw his team under the bus when he took all the praise outside of Gardner Minshew for what was a pretty successful couple of 2018 after all that happened at the start of it, I think, yeah, it's not a great look for Mike Leach this weekend after what is a season which he's grasping for air at the minute, Adam.
Yeah, I think they probably have just run out of juice from last year, and not quite got the talent. I've got two more that both end in players getting hit in the head. One of them is Vontaze Burfict, who the NFL have basically put the guy in the bin, ultimately, because he's not playing again this season, and probably ever again, if we're being honest. And I think the NFL made the right decision. I mean, this is a guy who is a genuine danger to opponents when he's on the field. Like, he is an animal, and I think it's absolutely right that he is not going to play again this season. Yeah. But the other one is the referees in the Buffalo against New England game, and it's not their fault. It's a fault of the rule. But how can a holding penalty offset a headshot on the opposing quarterback that knocks him out of the game?
Yeah. And also,
it's a real blind spot in the rules there, because it basically means that if anyone holds, like, on the offensive line, the defense can just notice that and basically have a free shot at anyone they want, because they're not going to get a punishment for it. And it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that Josh Allen play is, if that's on the other quarterback in that game, then it's kicking off Sports Center every night this week. But the fact it isn't against Buffalo, a team like Cleveland, somewhat with a burgeoning reputation, a burgeoning kind of pigeonhole in the wider NFL. There's a lot wrong with that. Another thing with the rule book as well is how reluctant and how complete hogwash this new PI review thing looks. I mean, because there's one in the game on Monday night where it's not PI in no league or no level of the sport is that a PI, and they just seem so reluctant to just overturn anything. It kind of just makes it's almost like the rule was just complete window dressing because Sean Payton cried into his gumbo all off season. It's just like, if they're going to make a rule change which could be of benefit to the league, then you've got to overturn stuff like they didn't this weekend. Al Riveron and the referees, I think they deserve their spot in the bin this weekend. I think that is everything, Adam.
A wonderful spin.
If you want to get involved with the podcast, you can. One more chapter committee, UK Seahawkers wider group thing. For the second year running, Super Bowl evening Super Bowl night. We are watching the Super Bowl again at O'Neill's in Birmingham City Centre. So, yeah, we've got the upstairs room. If anyone was there last year, we were downstairs. This year, their upstairs room is open and pretty resplendent. So we'll be there on the first Sunday of February 2020 for the Super Bowl. You never know. It could be quite a fun evening and quite a stressful evening if certain things and certain cards fall a certain way. Before we get to the podcast, you can
please do. Please get in touch. Just any comments are always appreciated. Anything you want us to talk about, just do it. It's always great to see.
You have both of us on Facebook. I'm assuming ways to get in touch with the podcast on all the usual means. The UK Seattle Seahawks fans page on Facebook, the Pedestrian Podcast page on Facebook, the Podbean pedestrianpodcast.com. We're on Spotify if you want to search the Pedestrian Podcast, and also ukseahawkers.com, UK Seahawkers on Instagram, and our personal ones are all listed and tagged in all the different posts and happenings and musings on all those platforms. But yeah, until next time, enjoy the game, enjoy the action green, or don't enjoy it, if whichever your way of view. And we'll be back next week to preview the Browns game and another 10 a.m. start for these Seattle Seahawks. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Beat the fucking Rams.
You know, we just practice that, you know what I'm saying? Keep our feet moving, drive on contact, try to be explosive with the ball, and, you know, try to make something happen.